Ezekiel chapter 3. Ezekiel chapter 3. Ezekiel was one of thousands of young men that, just like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and so many others that got carted off down to Babylon to be in captivity for that 70 years. At the time that he was taken captive, he was studying to be a priest. And God spoke to him and changed his way of thinking from studying to be a priest to training him to be a prophet. The difference there, one man made maybe, but God training him to be a prophet was God called, and what the Lord had for him in his heart and his life. And so all the time that, you know, Jeremiah, we spent our time with him and how he was the weeping prophet and how he conveyed the Lord's work. And I told you in the very starting of Jeremiah that he's going to be the most hated man in the land, and he was. No respect, no honor, anything in his heart and his life and the things that he's doing. But Ezekiel's going to follow in his footsteps, yeah? And so it doesn't matter what it is that God calls you and I to do and impresses upon us, he's going to prepare us for that, and he's going to help us to be able to accomplish that in our hearts and our lives. So we're going to watch as we move through Ezekiel here, as God is going to shape his character to fit whatever mission he has for him. Some weird things went on in Ezekiel's life. It's kind of hard to understand the Lord's asking him to do, but we'll look at those as we go along and the things that he would have us to see and his heart and his life. Verse 1 says, and he said to me, son of man, eat what is before you. Eat this scroll and then go and speak to the house of Israel. So I opened my mouth and he gave me the scroll to eat. And he's talking about the word of God and for him to feast on that, and study that word and share and get ready. And he said it was good to eat, sweet as honey. And he's going to talk about it in a minute. He said, in verse 3, then he said to me, son of man, eat this scroll I am giving you and fill your stomach with it. So I ate, and it tasted as sweet as honey in my mouth. He then said to me, son of man, go now to the house of Israel and speak my words to them. That he had him to feast upon or to eat and to take in and consume, he's now wanting him to let it out. Verse 5 said, you're not being sent to a people of obscured speech and difficult language. You're being sent to the house of Israel, your own people. And he said, not too many people of obscured speech and difficult language whose words you cannot understand. Surely, if I had sent you to them, they would have had to listen to you. But the house of Israel is not willing to listen to you because they're not willing to listen to me. They ain't going to listen to God. You know they're not going to listen to you. And it's what the Lord's telling him here. And he said, they are a tough bunch to deal with, and their hearts and their lives. Why were they not willing to listen to the Lord? He said, for the whole house of Israel is hardened and obstinate. They just have so sold themselves on the fact that because they, Jerusalem's a holy city, temple's built there, the house of God, and he accepted all those things. They just could not believe that God would let those things fall into the hand of the enemy, say nothing of being destroyed as it was and burnt down. We know from Jeremiah and them that they made three trips there. They got everything of any value, everybody that was any good, took them with them, and then burnt the rest. And he said they just hardened their hearts. They're obstinate, and you just can't hardly get through to them. We all know people like that today, don't we? That have just built a wall around themselves that's hard to penetrate. Verse 8 says, but I will make you as unyielding and hardened as they are. I will make your forehead like the hardest stone, harder than flint. Do not be afraid of them or terrified by them, though they are a rebellious house. I like what he said. I'll make you just as hard-headed as they are. What was he telling them when he told them that? You're going to have to be tough to deal with this bunch, you know? Because they are unyielding and hardened. He said, but I'll make your forehead like their forehead. Hard as stone, harder than a flint. Do not be afraid of them or terrified by them, though they are a rebellious house. God's kind of put his limit on what they can do when they rebel against the word, as Ezekiel preaches this to them. Verse 10 says, and he said to me, son of man, listen carefully and take to heart all the words that I speak to you. Go now to your countrymen in exile, go down to Babylon, and speak to them. Say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Whether they listen or fail to listen. He said, it's not your place. You do what I tell you to do. And he told them to go down there and speak to them. And tell them this is what the Lord has to say. And I'll take care of the rest. Verse 12 says, that then the Spirit lifted me up, and I heard behind me a loud rumbling sound. May the glory of the Lord be praised in his dwelling place. The sound of the wings of the living creatures brushing against each other, and the sounds of the wheels beside them, a loud rumbling sound. The Spirit then lifted me up and took me away. And I went in bitterness and in the anger of my spirit with the strong hand of the Lord upon me. I came to the exiles who lived at Tel Aviv near the Kedar River. You remember last Wednesday night, we weren't here Sunday night, but Wednesday night was a week ago. The Kedar River was where a lot of the exiles to Babylon down there had went out and made a little city out there and were living in these places here in little communities like. And this one was near the Kedar River. And there where they were living, I sat among them for 7 days, overwhelmed. 7 days of sitting in the midst was a sign of mourning. That's how, and you know, we have all here old enough, we've seen all kinds of times of mourning for individuals. You know, we've seen back in the day, you know, they'd keep them out 2 days and nights, you know, bring them back out to the house, you know, and stuff. And from that, we've gone to the funeral home, from the funeral home to one day serve them, one day serve to this, you know, and we just keep moving the according to the day and the time that we're living in now, our hearts and our lives. But he said it was their custom that they sat in silence for 7 days of mourning. And so he joined in with them, not mourning for the death or the loss of one of their people, but for their spiritual death, that he was concerned that God had laid upon his heart for them to do in their hearts and their lives, and what they were doing in their hearts and their lives. Verse 16, he begins to sign a warning to Israel. He said, at the end of 7 days, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. So hear the word I speak and give them warnings from me. And the day and the time that he's talking about here, with them being in bondage like they are, the watchman was a very, very important job. And if the watchman failed to do their job, they went to sleep while on post, and the enemy were to come in, and whether it be one or a whole army or whatever, the watchman was responsible for the safety of the city. If he failed in his responsibilities, he got killed in place of those that he failed to protect. So he's saying here that after the 7 days of mourning, he said, the word of the Lord came to me and said, son of man, I made you a watchman for the house of Israel. So for the time they have left in their exile down in Babylon, whether it be in the city of Babylon itself or whether in one of these outlying little cities that they'd built out by the river and stuff, why was it important that they be close to a river or stream or stuff? Many folks had to have water in it, and so much importance in that. And verse 18, he said, when I say to a wicked man, you will surely die, and you do not warn him or speak out to dissolve him from his evil ways in order to save his life, that wicked man will die for his sins. Listen to this. And I will hold you accountable for his blood. And you heard me say many a times, usually most of the time it's at funerals and stuff, you know, that it's I've been to funerals and stuff where talked about the person, what a good family, what a good job, this, that, and that. Never heard anything about the word of God and person's need to be saved and stuff. It's too late for that dead person. But Brother Ernie asked me one time, a long time ago, he called on to do something, and he said, what do you say when you don't know? I said, Brother Ernie, I can't tell him what I don't know, so I tell him what I do know, and I tell him about Jesus, and that's all he can do, you know? That's what he's saying here. He said that the Lord has sent me to say this, and if I say it, he said, then my hands are clean. But if I fail to, your blood be on my hands. I don't want anybody's blood on my hands. You know, I want to tell them, thus saith the word of God. Verse 19 said, but if you do warn them, and that wicked man, and he does not turn from his wickedness and from his evil ways, he will die for his sins, but you will save yourself. Will not be held liable for that person that rejected and refused to listen, and when you shared the word with them. Verse 20 said again, when a righteous man turns from his righteousness and does evil, and I put a stumbling block before him, he'll die. Remember, now we're living under the law in the Old Testament times and stuff. Never gotten to the New Testament where Jesus died on that cross. That put a whole different light on what we'll be studying when we get a little bit further. And see, he said, since you did not warn him, he will die for his sin. The righteous thing he did will not be remembered, and I'll hold you accountable for his blood. But if you do warn the righteous man not to sin, and he does not sin, he will surely live, because he took warning, and you will have saved yourself. And so, righteous man, you know what's right, did good, and then something waylays him. The devil dices that carrot in front of him until he grabs it, turns away from it. He said, if he dies in his unrighteousness, you know, hold your blood for him. If you try to correct that individual, and he refuses, woe is him. But his blood won't be on your hands and your heart and your life. The things that are taking place concerning that. Is God being tough on Ezekiel? He's just telling him what he wants him to go and tell these people that are in exile. Visualize in your mind with me for a moment. All these thousands of people in this place, or maybe some hundreds of folks in this place and thousands of folks over here. Anyway, and all these different things. They're all mad. They're all upset. They all are brokenhearted because they were so sure that they being God's chosen people, the Jew, and the temple being there and the house Solomon built him, all those things. They were so sure that God didn't bail them out. And now God is preparing, Jeremiah's done, wore himself out, teaching them, preaching to them, thus saith the word of God. Now here comes Ezekiel on, and he's been given the charge to spit it out, tell them like it is. They like it, they like it. They lump it, they lump it, you know. It's up to them what they do with the word of God. And so, how'd you like to be in Ezekiel's shoes? Go up to him and say, man, you lost. If you don't get saved, you're going to go spend eternity in hell. And when he woke up, when the fella knocked him out, you know, and he landed over there in the rock pile somewhere or another, they were mad. They were aggravated. They were discouraged, you know. But God said, now, Ezekiel, I'm not going to hold you responsible unless you fail to tell them what I tell you to tell them. Okay? So, as he gets to that part, and things that he would have me do, and my heart and life. Verse 22 said, the hand of the Lord was upon me there, and he said to me, get up and go out to the plain, and there I'll speak to you. So I got up, and I went out to the plain. And the glory of the Lord was standing there, like the glory I'd seen by the Kabar River, and I fell face down. You know, in chapter 1, Wednesday night of the week ago, the Lord appeared to him, you know, and changed his from going out to studying to be a priest to being a prophet. And he's on his way down into captivity down there, and God's working in his hearts and life. And he said, I saw the same glory of the Lord that I saw down by the Kibar River last time. Verse 24 said, then the Spirit came unto me and raised me to my feet. He spoke to me and said, go, shut yourself inside your house, and you, son of man, they will tie with ropes. You will be bound so that you cannot go out among the people. I will make your tongue stick to the roof of your mouth so that you will be silent and unable to rebuke them, though they are a rebellious house. But when I do speak to you, I will open your mouth, and you shall say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. Whoever will listen, let him listen. Whoever will refuse, let him refuse. For they are a rebellious crowd. And things that they're doing here. And the only thing Ezekiel's able to speak is what God tells him to speak. He'll stick his tongue to the roof of his mouth where he can't speak. But when he's got a word that he wants him to share, he'll loose that and take them away. And so the people knew by this that he wasn't playing games. That what he was sharing with them truly was a message from the Lord. And that God was dealing with them. And he was speaking on God's authority and not his own, his heart and his life. Now some really shifting gears. I want you to see something here in chapter 4. Son of man, take a clay tablet. We'd say get a piece of paper and a pencil. Put it in front of you. Draw the city of Jerusalem on it. Told him to lay out the picture of the boundaries of the city of Jerusalem. Then lay siege to it. Erect siege work against it. Build a ramp up to it. Set up camps against it. And put battering rams around it. He told them on paper, on the scroll he has here, draw out the picture of the city of Jerusalem. Then he has him to go in and pencil in things to make it militarily safe. And where he's to put up a ladder. You know, they would build them ladders and they'd come. You'd watch some of them old movies and stuff. And be 25, 30 men running with that ladder. They'd get there and swing it up against the wall and go up the wall and over the wall and get inside. And the cavalry and them would be shooting them up, you know, in the cowboy movies and stuff, you know. And they were some of the most pitiful shooting I ever seen in my life. They'd shoot 100 times and wouldn't be able to die, you know. And they always got shot in the arm, you know, over here, you know, somewhere or another, in their heart and their life. He said, put all this in place. Then he tells him in verse 3, take an iron pan, get a sheet of iron, place it on an iron wall between you and the city, and turn your face toward it. It'll be under siege, and you shall besiege it. And it's going to repel those arrows and those different things that are going to be casket at it. He said, this will be a sign to the house of Israel. Better get ready, because them Chaldeans is on their way. They're going to set up their little camps all around. And what did we learn last Wednesday night? What happened to so many of them? Caused the women to even want to cook their children and eat it. So, while they was under siege there, them Chaldeans just set up camp, eat out of their fields and barns and stuff on the outside. While they were shut up on the inside, and them shut up on the inside, slowly began to starve to death, thirst to death, you know. And stuff, and it got so bad that the women cooked and ate their own children. Can't imagine anything in my wildest imagination that would be like that, and what he's doing. And this is one of the things that I don't get it, but we're gonna go through it. Verse 4 says that after he drawed the picture and he put all the places in for him and told him to pay attention, he said, then lie on your left side and put the sin of the house of Israel upon yourself. You are to bear their sins for the number of days that you lie on your side. I have assigned you the same number of days as the years of their sins. So for 390 days, you will bear the sins of the house of Israel. 390 days. Got to lay on their left side, you know. And I don't know. I sleep on my right, huh? No, you'll see in a minute, you know, he tells him to go do this, he'll do that. But you're bearing the sins of the house of Israel, house of Bexley now, you know. Hey. I can't grasp the significance of that, man. But it ain't over with yet. Look at verse 6. He said, after you've finished the 390 days, lie down again, this time on your right side, and bear the sins of the house of Judah. First 390 was for the sins of Israel. It's still split. It's still northern kingdom, southern kingdom. And stuff. So the southern kingdom, 390 days. The northern kingdom, or Judah, he said, I have assigned you 40 days for each year. Turn your face towards the siege of Jerusalem, and with barred arms prophesy against her. I will tie you up with ropes so that you cannot turn from one side to the other until you have finished the days of your siege. And so he's having to bear the sins of Judah, Israel. The things that they're going to do in their hearts and their lives. And the days of their siege. And he's going to be tied up with those ropes and stuff, his mouth, tongue sucked to the top of his mouth until the Lord releases it. Then he's only allowed to say what the Lord tells him. Okay. Verse 9. Take wheat and barley, beans and lentils, millet and spelt. Put them in a storage jar and use them to make bread for yourself. You're to eat it during the 390 days that you lie on your side. Weigh out 20 shekels of food to eat each day, and eat it at a set time. So, 8 ounces. How many of us can survive on 8 ounces of food a day? You know, just enough to make a man mad, ain't it? And So, thing that he's talking about here. And then, about 2/3 of a quart of water to drink. And so, weigh out 20 shekels. And that's got to last him that 40 days. Verse 11 said, also measure out a sixth of a hin of water and drink it at set times. Got to make that to 2/3 of a quart last. You can only drink at certain times. Eat the food as you would a barley cake. Bake it in the sight of the people using human excrements for fuel or waste. The Lord said, in this way the people of Israel will eat defiled food among the nations where I drive them. But you know, Moses gave them strict orders in Deuteronomy what they could and couldn't eat, what they could and couldn't do. So now he's going to argue with the Lord a little bit. Ezekiel is. Look what he said in verse 14. Then I said, not so, sovereign Lord. I have never defiled myself. From my youth until now, I have never eaten anything found dead, no roadkill, or torn by wild animals. Something to get into you. Heal one of your best yearlings or something. No unclean meat has ever entered my body. Very well, he said. I'll let you bake your own cake. Make your own bread. But you're going to do it over cow manure instead of human excrements. And so. You just. Yeah. Now, I've heard some, one of old folks would gather cow patties. First one, what was it? I know, you know, when they used to have the wakes and they bring the folks back home, you know, and build a fire outside and a drum or whatever, you know, for not only for the warmth of it, but it's in their springtimes. Winter, summertime, what the mosquitoes and stuff, you know, things and stuff. But I can't remember what the, if that was when they used the cow patties or it was done to discourage something. I don't forget what it was, you know. But yeah. Absolutely. Old timey houses. Still didn't have all the modern conveniences we got today. And stuff in our hearts and our life. 390 days on the left side. How many days on the right side? 40? Uh-huh. And then have to be tied to a post with a rope. His tongue stuck. You couldn't even beg Sheldon to bring me a knife when you come back by, Sheldon. Couldn't speak because his tongue was stuck to the top. Now this is God's messenger. And if God's putting his messenger through this, what do you think he's got planned for those hard-headed Baptist that's down there in Babylonian captivity, you know? Got a lot to think about, hadn't you? A lot to do in his heart and his life. And lastly here in verse 16-17, it said, he then said to me, son of man, I will cut off the supply of food in Jerusalem. The people will eat rationed food in anxiety and they'll drink rationed water in despair. Things begin to get tough. We saw some of that last week, you know, as introduced. They didn't have anything to eat, anything to drink. Food and water will be scarce. They will be appalled at the sight of each other and will waste away because of their sins. And just like with Jeremiah, what was the Lord wanting Jeremiah to get the Jews to do? Go on down there and make the best of it, you know? But they said, no, we're going to go to Egypt, you know? Some snuck away and went to Assyria down there. Some went yonder, you know? Got away out of the millions that was being caravaned across there and stuff. But if it had just went on down there, what did he tell them when they got there? Build your houses and live in them. Dig your wells and drink from it. Yeah. Plant your gardens and eat from them. Fill your barns. Just told him common sense. Everyday living. For 70 years. And then he promised them. He said, I'll return. Restore Jerusalem. They may not have lived to have seen it. According to how old those like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and others were at the time. You had 70 years. If they were 15 to 18 years old, you know, and they had 70 years, then about 88 or 90 years old or something like that, you know, come back. But we know that some did get to return. Because the old king, I can't remember when he come, he had compassion on him. And he let, who was it? Well, help me. Let him take a handful and go back and assess, see what was going to be needed to rebuild Jerusalem. Was it Zedekiah? I can't remember. I'll look at that. But, you know, he went back and done an assessment to see. And things. All right. Any question about this? Anything you want to share? Yep. I was watching on Channel 13 News Sunday night. They're taking a story about that Mosaic church in Ocean Springs and how they had to move from the church to the Coliseum down there to get all the people inside and everything. And I don't understand all the they're peddling either, you know, but it makes me wonder what God's gonna. You heard him say, if you mislead somebody, your blood's on your hands, you know. If you try to correct them and they refuse, your hands are clean. Yeah. Bothers me, you know. And the whole world is in mourning the loss of the Pope. And he might have been a good man, and the thousands that fill the streets and stuff and all the things to do it. But he's a man, not God. Any other thought? Anything you want to share?